Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast, Swagoo and Perk, an ESPN podcast led by his namesake host Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins, with new episodes every Tuesday morning. Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey, with can't-miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Jhené Egbuamuke, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us. Check him out on First Things First Mornings on Fox Sports 1. Nick Wright, what's going on?
What up, Bo? Good to talk to you. Good to see you. What are we talking about?
Well, first, I just wanted to make sure, like, have you offered to donate your abdomen in case LeBron need one?
Oh, see. That's we start there. LeBron will be fine. I'm not into donating. You know, that's an interesting question. So I would definitely, if such technology existed, if like the week before the Super Bowl, Mahomes needed a pinky or ring finger from my right hand, I think I could do that. Anything internal, I'm not into, but the pinky or ring, finger or toe for Mahomes, because there's the hometown connotation, I think I would do. LeBron's my age. Like, if LeBron's body's failing, my body's going to fail. By the time most people are listening to this, I think LeBron's absence is going to be done. I think LeBron's playing Friday.
I tell you this, though, that Russell Westbrook thing is not going to work with them. And I don't know how exactly they deal with that once they fully come to that realization.
So let me ask you this. So when it happened, it was questionable, and it obviously has been in practice probably worse than even people were questioning it. Let me give a slight devil's advocate. Russ looked terrible the first few months in Houston and then was really good the last couple months. The exact same thing happened in Washington. Are you not open to the possibility that a similar thing can happen? And if what I think the Lakers should do is just essentially play Russell at center, what they did in Houston, because the reason it really won't work, you can't have Russell and a center out there. Certainly not DeAndre Jordan, who is cooked, just finished. So I am open to the idea of AD, LeBron, Russ, and two shooters still can be dynamic once LeBron and Russ get on the same page. Do you not think that's possible?
Well, so the center part with him in Houston was where I was going to go, because the dilemma with Anthony Davis is he's at his best playing center in spite of the fact that he doesn't want to do it. And so can you run it right with the both of them in order to make it work with Russ? I just don't know. Like that's, and the thing that makes Russ so tricky is that you'll pick up the box score after the game and it looks like it was Russell Westbrook, you know, like you're like, oh, wow, he put up 25, 12 and 9.
But it hasn't been. Here's the one other thing. Again, I'm just going to try to, I don't even know if it's devil's advocate, but I'm going to give Russ the benefit of the doubt in this regard as well. Interesting thing in Russell Westbrook's career. Who's the best big man he's ever played with?
Steven Adams.
Young Steven Adams. And after that, it's like Nick Collison, Kendrick Perkins. You know, Ibaka didn't really play that position. So I think some people have been surprised that Russ and AD don't have more chemistry. And my response to that would be Russ has never played with an offensively even above average center or big man. I know AD is only someone playing center. So I think that's going to take some time as well. I also think that the Lakers are absolutely, abjectly, without a doubt, screwed if LeBron is not fully healthy for the playoffs and LeBron can't still activate, you know, at a minimum, top three player in the world mode. I think he still can. If he can't, then this is all pointless anyway, because one thing we have learned about Anthony Davis is, as talented as he is, he cannot be relied upon to be your best guy. The idea was, well, the reason the LeBron-Lakers thing is going to work so well is that by this point, LeBron's fourth year with the Lakers, LeBron could be the second best guy and AD could be the best guy. No. LeBron has to be the best guy. AD has to be the supporting actor. At least that's how it looks to me.
So I'll tell you, I thought about that part too, but I looked at that press conference that did, I guess it was about a week ago, after the Minnesota game, where they asked Anthony Davis about how they were playing, and he was very strident in how bad they had been and everything else. I felt like that was the first time in his career that I had seen him like truly act like the best player on a team that's supposed to win a championship. You know what I mean? Like yeah. There seemed to be something different in his mind about that. And I wonder if it's possible that we're now at a point where he is making a transition mentally into that place. Cause it's not like he doesn't have a game for it. Now I'm not saying that's absolutely happening, right? Like there's no guarantee to that, but I do kind of wonder that if maybe this is the place where he's making that transition to understand I can't run shotgun behind LeBron no more. I got to be able to go out here and get these buckets.
And if that happens, then the math is different for the Lakers, right? Like, but just thus far, to me, he hasn't snatched that mantle. And he hasn't, to me, on a consistent basis, looked interested in snatching that mantle. I know, like, those blown leads against the Thunder when LeBron was out, that stuff is just shouldn't happen. And it was happening far too often. And also, some of the stuff Vogel's doing is, to me, utter foolishness. But again, it's early season. It's early for everyone except for the Nets. It's very late for them, and they had someone get MVP chance in their own building yesterday, which I really hope we're going to get to.
Yo, I was actually about to go there right next because my man's in town. He asked me if I wanted to go to the game, and you got a higher capacity for all them people than I do. And I was like, yeah. I ain't trying to hump it back from Brooklyn late, and now I'm mad. Sounds like it was an incredible night in there. And I can't figure out if it was just that it was actual Warriors fans or if Nets fans were just like, nah, we jumping on board with the real star in the house.
Bo, are there Nets fans?
You live Yo, in New it's York a City. Great question.
People gave me because a couple weeks ago, I posted a screenshot of Nets tickets about 30 minutes before tip-off on StubHub, and they were $7. And some disingenuous folks in NBA media were like, oh, God forbid teams have affordable tickets. It's like, hey, guys, this isn't from Nets.com. This is the secondary market. And you can't walk into Madison Square Garden, don't care who the opponent is, for under $75. You just can't. It's not available to you. And for the Nets, early in the season, with Durant and Harden both playing, the fact that tickets were the same price as a large latte across the street is, to me, significant. And if people are like, oh, KD hasn't captured the Nets fan base yet. There isn't one. There just isn't one.
Right.
I was there for the playoff games last year. Aside from game five when it was against the Bucks, when it was very clear like Kevin Durant was doing something very special historically, it never felt like an intense environment. They just don't have that type of deeply invested loyalty. But Bo, have you ever heard the opposing team's player? I've heard opposing team's players get MVP chants in stadiums, but never when the home team literally has an MVP on the roster.
Yeah, I say you have like, two of them.
Oh, that's right. Harden, too. I forgot. I've never seen that. That is, to me, unprecedented. And is it a little interesting to you that I think this is the best KD's ever played? And in every single category, he had his worst game against the Warriors. National TV, at home, Warriors. You're having your best season. You're seemingly unguardable. And you go 0-for-8 in the second half. I know Nash waved the white flag early. And to me, there's just so many Nets problems right now. Harden's not the same guy. Griffin's cooked. Nash yesterday didn't play LaMarcus Aldridge in the first half. His third leading scorer. But then he played the second half. That to me just, I know it sounds silly. Did he forget to play him? Like, what's the other rationale? It's not a great roster, and it's really not a great roster with Harden being, instead of the sixth best player in basketball, the 26th best player in basketball. If that maintains, they have no shot, no matter how great KD is.
All right, so Nash is going to have to coach. Like, this is the thing where this comes up, is that he's going to have to coach now. When you get these guys who haven't coached before and just throw them in and be like, oh, okay, figure it out. Like with Steve Nash, Steve Kerr came in when he got to Golden State, at least with a very clear vision, and brought in some guys who implemented some stuff. But we, as we got farther down on it, it was like, hey, man, if we need this guy to coach, can he actually pull that off? And with Nash, now we're going to find out. Like, and I thought that that was a roster largely last year that we were going to need to find out if he could coach, but it was just such a strange year that it never really, really came up. Now you're going to have to coach, like in terms of managing this whole crazy Kyrie thing and everything that's come along with that, and strategically looking at what that roster is, you have to figure out how to make that work. And as you put it, this James Harden's thing, I don't have a counterexample to, like, anything that counterexample. Like, I don't have a similar example. Like, I was thinking about it in the opposite direction. In fact, involving Steve Nash, once they changed the rules about contact on the perimeter, Steve Nash went from a dude in the NBA to a Hall of Famer just that quick. Like, you can look at it on his basketball reference page. You can tell the year the rules changed. It's obvious and clear. They started changing how they were going to handle all that insurance fraud. And now it's not just that they're not giving James Harden those calls. He looks slow and sluggish all the time while also looking like he's in shape.
So here's the thing. I think this has cut Harden a bunch of different ways. One is, if for 7 years you play a certain way, it is going to be very difficult to adjust. It's going to take time. But here's the other part of it. Harden, I think everyone can agree, he even said it when he was taking that shot at Giannis. He was like, I wish I was big and tall and fast, could run and jump. But he's not, by NBA standards, a great athlete, right? He's not incredibly fast. He can't jump incredibly high. He is good, you know, width, and he's strong, but he's not like super tall by NBA standards. So why was he so great at getting to the basket? Well, I think the logical answer to that is defenders guarded him a certain way out of fear of fouling. So now it's not only he's not getting the calls, now he's being guarded far more honestly because guys aren't as afraid of fouling him. And so he's having trouble getting around them. Sometimes when he does get around them, the old muscle memory kicks in, and instead of trying to score, he tries to draw the foul. It's all bad for him. Every single part of it is bad for him. And Nash isn't helping, in that Nash is still doing this nonsense of resting Harden and Durant at the same time to start the second quarter. He's trying to get Harden back to being James Harden. Give him some run on the court, surround him with shooters with no KD, and be like, go be Houston James Harden for 4 minutes, start the second quarter, and see if you get back going. He's not doing that. One other, you mentioned the Nash Kerr thing. Kerr had a few things working for him. One was Popovich, Phil Jackson. So he's a smart player, and he plays under the two greatest coaches of the modern era, right? Learns from them, then runs a team. Nash didn't play for some all-time great coach. He played most of his career, Mike D'Antoni. And then he goes essentially right out of playing to coaching. He just has not, like, I never thought the Nash thing made sense. I thought the Nets picked him because KD and Kyrie wanted him because they didn't want – didn't they pick him because they wanted a coach that they would be able to dictate things to? But now he's got a coach. And I don't know how much people are watching Blake. Blake looked like one guy in Detroit, then he got to the Nets and looked rejuvenated. He looks worse than Detroit Blake right now. He looks terrible. And he's important to them. He was one of the most important players on the playoff roster. So I don't know. I think the Nets are in real, real trouble.
So I'd say on Harden's athleticism, the one thing that he has is short space quickness, right? Like, his acceleration is great. And what I always thought was incredible about him is, even if he wasn't moving that fast, like, he could be moving at a reasonably brisk pace and still be hitting you with low crosses, right? Like, there's still a chance that he might change directions on you, but he doesn't look like that. Like, that's the thing that gets me, is that short space quickness. When you look at him, like, I think Rob Perez had put out a video of somebody shutting James Harden down, and it was wild because he's doing all the crossover stuff or whatever. I don't even know who the dude was that was guarding him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like it was some guy, like Thibault or somebody I recognize as being some great defender. And he just stayed in front of James Harden. He doesn't have that. Now, here's a number I'm pretty sure you're familiar with, but it's still worth noting. James Harden in the 2020 season averaged 11.8 free throws per game. He is averaging 5.8 this year, right? So that's like a decrease of over half. But sneakily in there is that last year, and I'm just going to use the Brooklyn part because those few games in Houston, he was kind of tanking it. He only averaged 7.3 free throws per game. Again, this is after 11.8 the year before. Like, this actually may have been starting a little bit and we didn't notice it. And now we're here, because if he can't get to the line, we're not really talking about anything. Like, he's a good three-point shooter, but he's not a great three-point shooter.
And I give him credit for hacking the math. The 3 years he won three straight scoring titles in Houston, averaging 30, 36, and 34, he was shooting a combined 24 threes and free throws a game. Like, that, you know how you score 35 a game? Shoot the other than dunks, what's the most efficient shot you can shoot? Free throws. Get a dozen of those a game and shoot 11 threes. Now it's like 7-7. It's been cut by 40%. It's a huge problem for them. And I do kind of like the fact that KD and Steph, who were, you know, the best scorers of the last decade, Harden, KD, Steph, I think is what most people would say. Like, LeBron and Giannis are kind of different, even though they score super high levels. They're not looked at in that regard. KD and Steph are having two of their best seasons ever. And Harden looks like a different guy. And I do wonder, you know, Harden's older than people think. What's Harden, 32? He's 32. He's never been like the workout warrior. I think all of that is a real consideration and is something to monitor closely for the year.
He's also got a sneaky odometer. He got a lot of miles. Because one, say what you want about James Harden, but in the era of load management, that's a dude
who never played a lot of games
and played a lot of playoff games, right? Like, just because the Rockets weren't winning championships didn't mean they weren't going two series deep, three series deep.
And never got the, you know, KD missed the year with the Achilles, forget the broken foot, long time ago. Steph missed the year with the broken hand when they were like, we're going to be terrible anyway. Take as much time as you need, right? Harden, prior to the hams, like, he never missed time. He never, I've got to imagine that over the last 8 years, only, I don't have it in front of me, but my guess is only LeBron's played more minutes. That over the, you know, that Harden has been second to LeBron in total minutes played, maybe total games played. And that my guess, in fact, in the regular season, Harden probably in the last 8 years played more than LeBron, because LeBron missed that time with the groin his first year with the Lakers. Like, it's, that's concerning. Can I don't know what all you want to talk about today, but can I ask you a KD Steph question?
Oh, yeah.
So right now, this moment, I know you're not as, you know, nerdied into the rankings as I am, but you like it. Right now, this moment, if you were ranking all-time NBA history players, one to whatever, who would you have ahead all-time, KD or Steph?
KD.
Okay, and you said it instantly. Right, so I have them 14 and 15 all-time with KD ahead. What if Steph wins the title this year?
Yo, if Steph wins the title, we have to talk about him in spite of the reverential tones that we use already. We'll have to talk about him in a completely different way, because this is my read on this. I've talked about it on here. I'm curious what you think about this. The Warriors, I've thought their whole plan with this has been illogical, because you can't keep a core together for 7 or 8 years. Like, there normally has to be some fundamental changes to the core. Like, so even Magic Johnson on that whole run, like in 82, you add James Worthy. Like, that's a way that you shake things up. You know what I mean? Like, those kinds of things normally have to happen. And so with the Warriors, they added Kevin Durant, but then they went back to basically what the core was in 2014, 2015.
And even brought back Iggy.
Right. So, like, that's just normally not how this works, no matter how good the players are. But if they do this, and you go look at that roster, I mean, I guess adding Andrew Wiggins is maybe a bit of a change, though I'm still not there with him. and these young guys they have, I'm still not really there with them. If Steph wins a title with this roster, after winning a title with the 2015 roster, you can make an argument that he's got two titles, honestly, on some more with less. Like, I feel like we hyped up Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, both very good players, but there was a point where we were calling them Hall of Famers, and it's only because for them to be as good as they were, logically, those dudes would have to be Hall of Famers, when it's actually entirely possible. No, Steph Curry is just that damn good.
Well, so that's the thing. So I think most people – so Steph has more MVPs than KD. He has more championships than KD. But people are like, they played on the same team together, and KD was better than him, right? So I think – and people are like, one guy's 7 feet tall, one guy – like, just eye test, logic. You just say, okay, I don't care that one guy has more of the most important things, MVPs and rings. The other guy's better. But if Steph wins the title this year, and also, by the way, he's might win the MVP this year. Like, I think KD's been the best player in the league so far, but the Nets are good, not great. If the Warriors win 64 games, like, Steph right now, I would think would probably be the best bet for MVP. But set even that thing aside, if Steph wins the title this year and gets to four rings, I don't think it would be a fair argument. And obviously, KD won his rings going to Steph. Now, they don't win those titles. They don't beat LeBron. Certainly the 2017 Cavs without Kevin Durant. I understand that. But, and Durant was sensational in those finals. I'm not taking anything away from Durant. He was bad last night. Doesn't matter. He's been awesome this year. But it is fascinating that Steph, because to me, Bo, were you having this conversation last year? Last year, when because Steph was playing as well as he's ever played last year, and the Warriors didn't make the playoffs. The conversation we were like lightly having on our show was, should Steph consider leaving if he wants to win another title? Like, is signing up with Golden State, you know, punting on his chance? Because, yes, they have all these young guys, but they're so young.
Right.
That it's like by the you draft an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, draft Wiseman, that's great. Unless you're going to trade them for a piece, and that's the other interesting part of the Warriors. If they want to add a great player, a very good player, they have the pieces now to do it, and they're getting Klay back. But my thought process was Steph Curry will never play in another NBA Finals. Well, right now the Warriors have to look like, you know, at least co-favorites in the West. Like, we've got the Lakers are going to get the benefit of the doubt because of LeBron. But the Warriors have been awesome. If they win the title this year, to me, what it does for Steph historically is so wild and important. It can't be overstated.
So it's interesting that you mentioned, like, they have looked probably like the best team in the league, and they have a point differential to match up with it, right? The Nets game was so interesting to me because part of the thing with the Warriors so far, they've been beating up on a lot of bums. And that's not their fault. It just so happened that their schedule started with a bunch of bums, but like they lost to Charlotte before they won this game against the Nets. Like, that remains my question for them. And let's see how this goes as the year goes on. Because like Draymond Green for me is, I imagine he's the guy that's going to look better early in the year than he is late in the year. He's just physically at that point in his career. Andre Iguodala probably in the same place. They're going to be dependent on youngsters late to make contributions. That's a lot to ask for. Although Jordan Poole seems like he might be ready to be a guy, not so much that you can lean on, but you can count on, you know, to do some things.
And let me say one thing about Wiggins, because you and I have been in the same boat on Wiggins and critical of him. What also is true is if we just start treating Andrew Wiggins like contracts don't matter and like he was the seventh pick of the draft instead of the first, I think be like, oh, okay, this is a top 10 pick that's now in the prime of his career, has finally been around, you know, a good winning culture and can help you on both ends. Like, in that regard, he's a nice piece. But yes, the schedule concerns were real with Golden State. But, I mean, to just kick the shit out of Brooklyn on national television when, you know, KD's motivated. KD spent the whole morning liking tweets of randos arguing with Dieter Kurtenbaugh about the, you know, so KD's motivated. Shouldn't Harden have been motivated? Why has James Harden not been in the finals since he was with the Thunder? Because the Warriors always beat him. Like, you should be peak motivation. And to just get dog walked like that in the third quarter and then wave the white flag in the fourth was wild.
Oh, no, they were motivated. The first half made it clear. Like, that game was going up and down. Like, they were motivated. They just lost. Now, I will say this, and you're right. If the Warriors win something like 65 games, then Steph's going to be the MVP. Unless the Nuggets win like 66. Now, I find it unlikely that the Nuggets are going to win 66. And I have not watched that much NBA basketball so far this year. I haven't gotten to that place. But I'm going and looking at numbers, and I'm looking at the standings, and the little bit that I've watched, the best player in the league so far this year.
Stop it.
It's been Jokic, man.
So let me ask you something about this. And I say this to everyone about Jokic. The NBA is not as complicated as other sports. If you have the best player in the sport, unless the rest of your team is just trash, you should at least be, what, co-favorites to make the finals and or win the title. Even last year, when everyone was just, when I was an idiot for saying, listen, Jokic finds the MVP, he's going to be the worst MVP historically since Dave Cowens. Was anybody excited last year? Like, nope, the Nuggets are going to win the title. They lost Jamal Murray. Okay. And the Clippers lost Kawhi, and the Lakers lost LeBron and AD. And so this year, I'm just curious. If Jokic is the best player, are the Nuggets going to the finals? Because I don't think so. You got the best player in this. Like, there is a level of, no matter what the numbers are, does anyone actually think Jokic is better than Giannis, Durant, Steph, LeBron? Do you? I don't.
I think at this moment, give me the four that you just threw out again.
Giannis, Durant, Steph, LeBron.
All right. A key factor in this is that Jokic is playing defense this year. And
yeah,
playing defense apparently at an excellent level. Do I think he is a better player than those guys? I'm honestly not sure. What do I do with the fact that he's playing better than all of those guys again, right? Like, this was the thing I had with Steph. Like, that's what's interesting about the Steph KD discussion. Do I think that Steph's a better player than KD? No. But did I think he was a better player than KD in 2016? No. Did he play better than KD did in 2016? Yes. So what do I do with that? Because as crazy as the numbers were for Jokic last year, they're actually much better this year. Much better this year. And I agree with you, though. How do you reconcile that with the fact that people aren't that worried about the Nuggets? Now, if Murray and Porter were both healthy, I would have the Nuggets as the best team in the West. Without a hesitation.
Okay. And by the way, I think the Nuggets going into the year, now I didn't know what was going to go on with Michael Porter Jr., had a great chance of being the one seed, even though they weren't going to have Jamal Murray for the bulk of the beginning of the season. I understand that because, Jokic is excellent. There is a little bit of, when it comes to the numbers, to me with Jokic, a little bit that is, to bring up Harden again, similar to Harden during his great run in Houston, which is if you just look at the numbers, yeah, he's the best player. But does anyone actually think he's the best player? Like, no. Like, now, does that mean he's not a top 10 player? No, obviously he's a top 10 player. And for Jokic, maybe obviously he's a top 5 player. Like, now health is obviously the determining factor here. But if you were to guarantee me that both guys are going to be healthy for a full playoff run, would I necessarily rather have Jokic than Embiid? No, I not necessarily. Like, it's, I don't know. So I can't get there. Everyone else is there, and I understand his Raptor score and his LeBron score, which is a fancy metric, and his VORP, all these things, and people are throwing at me. He is on pace to have the highest PER in the history of the sport. Okay, I get all of that. I also think, like, Giannis is just clearly a better player than him, and so is Durant, and so is Steph, and so is LeBron.
I do think that what you get from having Jokic is more dependent on what his teammates do than any of those other guys. And I don't even mean dependent on how good his teammates are, but for that passing to matter, those dudes have to make shots, right?
That's true.
I don't feel like if it's like, all right, we're going to need you to get 45 tonight. I don't know if that dude can go out there and give you 45. Now, sometimes it's, if it's like LeBron, we're going to need a 45-point triple-double. That one is kind of possible, right? But if I need you to go down and just get bucket after bucket after bucket, it's fair to ask whether Jokic is that guy. The advantage that Embiid has over him, and why like 2 years ago I was unequivocally on Team Embiid, is Embiid is still a vortex on defense, right? Like he is still, when he is out there, just by his mere presence, changes the defensive math for everybody, right? Nobody wants to get anywhere near that dude. That part still matters. But at some point, while fully understanding where you're coming from, the results really are there with the dude. And we kind of got to acknowledge the actual performance.
And I do acknowledge the performance, but I also acknowledge like who the best player is in this sport has always been determined by you got to be amazing in the regular season and show it in the postseason. And when the Nuggets, they've been to round three once and they got dusted. They got at, and by the way, that was Jamal Murray was there. Michael Porter Jr. was there, but he was young. Jokic was there. And they got washed in five by the Lakers. And I am not comfortable at all ever calling a guy the best player in the league or even really making the argument if you haven't shown up in an NBA Finals. And by the way, that works against my guy Luka. Like Luka, you can win a regular season MVP, but Luka can't be in the discussion. Is he the best player in the league? Luka's got to get past round one. First of all, it's been tough. You get the Clippers back-to-back years. But like, so those guys, I just need to see it.
The same Clippers that Jokic put out of there? Just so we're clear?
No, that's fair. But if someone say right now Jokic is better than Luka, I'm down with that. Now, who would I rather have? I'll bet on the next 5 years of Luka over the next 5 years of Jokic. But Jokic isn't being – the argument isn't, is Jokic better than Luka? The argument is Jokic better than everyone? And the answer to me is pretty clearly no.
I got you there. Now, speaking of Luka, who I would like him more if you guys didn't like him so much, the insurance fraud game seems to have affected him a bit also.
Let me ask you this. Is it the insurance fraud game affecting him, or is it that Luka pretty clearly does not have a good offseason regimen?
He started the year the same way last year.
Started the same way. That Luka, I don't know what he does in Slovenia in the offseason, and I know this year he had the Olympics, but he doesn't seem to come in just tip-top shape. He really doesn't.
Have you ever looked at his splits by the month? They are completely random. Like, it's not like there's an arc where he comes in and he starts slow and then it picks up and then it just keeps going. It's like, yeah, November, not too good. December, all right. January, yeah. February, great. March, like I'm throwing those out like randomly. But when you look at them, it's like, it never goes straight.
Can I ask you a Mavs question in this regard? Right now, this moment. Who says no? Kristaps for Kyrie.
Oh, the Mavs say no.
Why?
It messes up the numbers. I don't that's about to say. The Mavs are like, got to go count how many white dudes we got to make sure this didn't go throw off the ratio. The Mavs stay having the most white dudes in the league. Like, I'm not saying that Mark Cuban's out there with a quota. It just works out that way. But if I'm the Nets, I definitely take that.
Yes. If you're the Nets, you take it. He fits them, like adds some good size that they need. And if you're the Mavs, when was Kyrie at his best alongside LeBron? Who is the player in the league who stylistically is the most like LeBron? Luka. And like Texas would throw their arms around Kyrie. He might get some riding governor votes. Like I know Kyrie's current stance is if I'm traded, I'll retire, but that was that was before the Nets told him, we're not going to play you at all this year. So I think that, and the Nets, by the way, Kyrie's not under contract after this season. So that's, to me, the reason the Simmons for Kyrie thing, even though it makes sense for both teams, is a tough one is, do the Sixers want to give the Nets exactly what they need, right? Like the Sixers still feel like we got to go through the Nets. So that one's going to be tough. I think Kristaps played well the last week. If he gets on like a roll to where it's like, oh, okay, Kristaps is back like 20 points a game looking good, I think that's an interesting trade.
Yeah, I agree with that. With Luka, I don't think he's really that stylistically similar to LeBron, because I think that because I think that LeBron is still primarily looking as playmaker, and I think that Doncic is primarily looking as guy trying to get his shot. Like, I think in terms of mentality, Luka's probably a bit more in line with Russell Westbrook than he is with LeBron James. The end result can kind of look the same, but I think the point at which they start, I think Luka is out here looking to get buckets, which is fine. Like, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I do think he's going to have to evolve that, though. Like, LeBron's game, only evolution LeBron's game really had to make is he had to stop feeling like he needed to, like, help the kids who aren't as good as him out, right? Luka is going to have to learn how to help the kids who aren't as good as him out. But that being said, the kids who aren't as good as him really aren't as good as him on his team.
Right. That's the thing, is the Mavs don't have a great roster. Like, and that's why the Luka first round exits, you know, his numbers have been so unbelievable. What I'm interested in seeing with Luka is, what do his playoff numbers look like when he's not playing against a team with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard guarding him on the perimeter? Like, what do Luka's playoff numbers look like if he draws in the first round a bad defensive team? What would Luka's numbers look like in a series against, you know, the Nuggets last year? Who, and I know once they added Aaron Gordon, they got some more perimeter defense, but someone that doesn't have, you know, the wing to go guard him as opposed to having to go against Paul George or Kawhi for every second of the game. I understand your annoyance with the anointing of Luka by a lot of folks in the media. I get that. I also, though, was one of those people anointing him. I picked him to win the MVP last year. But it is going to be interesting to see, because the Mavs aren't great. If they were to get bounced in round one again, then the knives will start to sharpen on him a bit.
Now, before we go, we talked all this basketball. You know why you wanted to come here. Your boy Patrick Mahomes had quite a performance on Sunday night. Is he back, or did he really leave? Because I did think he had a stretch where he didn't play well, but all these quarterbacks have these stretches in their careers. Like, I think that people overreacted to that part.
Correct. That's the part. Andy Reid said it after the game, and he was right. He stated it very simply, but it was exactly right. He said Patrick went the longest. Any quarterback in the history of the NFL is gone without a slump. Like, the only one that I could compare it to is, and I have to go through the game log, is Kurt Warner. Like, how long did it take for Kurt Warner to have a bad month? And Patrick did have, he didn't, wasn't having a bad season. Because first 5 weeks of the year, he was exceptional. The defense was just horrifying, and he had some bad turnover luck. But then he had a stretch where he was not good. And it culminated in that Packers game where that was the worst game I've ever seen him play. But then, and people laughed at me, I really felt like it was like a golfer with the yips who finally hits the one putt that snaps him out of it. The throw to end the Packers game, 3rd and 10, season kind of on the line, you roll out to your right, it's a broken play, he finds Tyreek Hill. I felt like that's the first time I've seen Patrick Mahomes in a month. And then against the Raiders, first pass of the game against the Raiders, he threw his left hand. People were like, oh, he needs to calm down. No, this idea, because here's the other thing, and this is what I hated about the analysis. The analysis was that Patrick Mahomes needs to essentially stop doing the things that makes him special in order to get back to basics. If Mahomes was forced to play the entire game within the pocket and forced to make every throw with good fundamentals, he's probably the 6th best quarterback in the league. What makes him go from a really good quarterback to the most special quarterback I've ever seen is the stuff he does that you're not supposed to do that's off schedule. You can't take that away from him. And against the Raiders, he just ripped their heart out. And I do feel like the Chiefs are the most dangerous team in the AFC again.
Yo, part of what shocked me this year was, look, I understood and expected the whole, can they figure Lamar Jackson out? I think they're figuring him out, which obviously, no, they have not. I thought that Patrick Mahomes was going to be exempted from that whole discussion. Nope, it went right back into maybe, I think, the same NFL media still crossing their goddamn fingers in year 13 of Matthew Stafford somehow thought that the cheat sheet had gotten around on Patrick Mahomes and everybody has suddenly decoded what it was that he was doing. Never mind he got coaches or anything like that, right? Nope, we have figured out Patrick Mahomes.
And this idea, it was just so simplistic, some of it. They're like, oh, teams have started to play too high safety. I've watched every snap of Patrick Mahomes' career. Teams started trying to do that. The team that did it most dedicated was the Bills last year. And when the Bills did it in the regular season last year, and the Chiefs ran the ball for 250 yards. It's like, okay, literally 250 yards. What would happen when teams would do this two-high safety stuff is Mahomes would take the underneath stuff, pick them apart, the Chiefs would get a lead, and then teams had to start blitzing and taking chances, and then Mahomes would hit them with the home run. He just had a slump. And, you know, Peyton Manning in year four had a five-game stretch, was 0-for-5, had like 10 picks. Nobody is going to go without ever having a bad stretch. But I do think it was a massive wasted opportunity by the rest of the AFC, because the Chiefs' defense for the first 5 weeks of the year was historically bad. Now, I don't think the defense is great now, but it's no longer the worst defense you've ever seen. Then Mahomes had the worst stretch of football he's ever had. And yet, despite that, through 10 weeks, only the Titans have more wins in the whole conference. You needed to get them when the getting was good, and the AFC didn't.
Well, let's talk about that defense, because football is a team game. It's never one guy's fault. Unless we're talking about the Chiefs defense. And I feel so bad because it's almost a trope, right? Like after all else has failed, though, what do we do? Yeah, we just throw at the white dude. And I remember I told you this. There was a preseason game. I think it might have been his rookie year. If it was Daniel Sorensen, number 43 for the Chiefs. And I watched a drive where I forget who they were playing, and all they did was motion out the running back and get Sorensen in man coverage and just throw it at him all the way down the field. But he turned out to be an okay, decent NFL player, right?
Like, he won the Chiefs, the playoff game you watched with me when I went upstairs to my room by myself, the Texans game, 24-0. And I left you alone because I was so despondent. He flipped that game. He's the one, he snuffed out the fake punt, and then he forced the fumble on the kick return right after. So he flipped that game. So he'll always hold a special place in Chiefs fans' heart. But he is cooked.
Yeah, but he was amazingly the hardest thing to be, which is an unremarkable white defensive back. Like, either you're going to be a fan favorite and they're going to put you in the Ring of Honor, or you're just out here getting scorched like the Conte dude who used to play for the Bears. Like, that seems to be it. Nope, he was just the dude out there. And then this year, people just ate his ass up. And the big shift for the Chiefs defense this year is they just had to stop putting them on the field. And when they stopped putting them on the field, all of a sudden they didn't look terrible anymore.
Right. They stopped putting them on the field, except for in very particular situations. Plus, Frank Clark woke up and Chris Jones got a little healthier. And now it's like, oh, okay, Chris Jones is excellent when he's healthy. Frank Clark has moments. Tyrann Mathieu's still really good. Like, all right, that's three of your 11. Can the other guys not be just horrible? Because that's the Chiefs don't need a top 10 defense. They just can't be a bottom three defense. Like, if they are the 20th best defense in football, they can absolutely go back to the Super Bowl.
Nah, we are in agreement there. Now, that is my man, Nick Wright. Check him out. First things first, FS1, 7:30 to 9:30 Eastern, Monday through Friday. Also, I'm going to just start sending you when Nuggets games are. Like, that's just what I need to do now. We got to get you on board with this. Something special going on, and you just don't want to be a part of it.
Okay, no problem. We'll watch some Nuggets games together, and then we'll watch some Mavs games together, and we'll see who's the better player. Yes, I'll talk to you later, Bo.
All right, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain, Dave Presley, handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.